Even with perfect 20/20 vision, it can be hard to read that little recycling symbol on the bottom of plastic bottles. Is that a 1 or a 7? And what do those mean anyway? So many of your questions are answered in a book by somebody who has spent years studying recycling from where items leave our hands to where the materials end up. The big question is the title of the new book. Jenny Romer is the author of Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Jenny Romer is on the spear point of the fight against single-use plastics. She's an attorney involved in writing legislation banning single-use plastics and a legal associate for the Surfrider Foundation's Plastic Pollution Initiative. Jenny Romer, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I should point out, this is not just a by-the-book kind of book. It's a very colorful book packed with illustrations by Christy Young. Give an overview of what you and Christy did here.
Yeah, so I wanted to write a book about recycling and particularly about policies to reduce single-use plastic, but I wanted to reach a wider audience than someone who might just pick that up on its own. So I've teamed up with Christy Young, an illustrator. She's based in Austin, and she filled the book with beautiful watercolor illustrations on almost every page to really bring to life what happens after you put something in the recycling bin. And then also talking about policy and plastics in the ocean a bit as well. So I think we really ended up with a great book that's really fun, in addition to being really informative about recycling and plastics.
Yeah, you don't steer away from the major messages, which can be somewhat grim at times about where our things end up when we are done with them. And in fact, you start with a cautionary note: recycling alone won't save the planet. I mean, what do we need for recycling to be effective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like you said, my day job is with the Surfrider Foundation, and we do have several chapters in Oregon and California. And my job is really focused on reduction of single-use plastics. So making sure that we aren't producing and using a lot of single-use plastics and having them end up in the ocean or in landfills or other places where they shouldn't be. And so I talk first about reduction usually. In this book, I focus on recycling just in large part because so many people really like recycling. I think we've been taught for so long, and a lot of it comes from marketing from the plastics industry, that the best thing we can do for the environment is recycle. But unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that we're using now are really low-value plastics that can't be recycled because a lot of the time there isn't the infrastructure. But the biggest thing really is that there's no end user. For the low-value stuff, for this stuff, and we can get into the resins in a moment, all those little codes that we see in the mm-hmm. chasing arrow symbols. But the low-value plastics, really, it means that there's no manufacturer on the other side that's going to want to buy that material and turn it into something else. And so if that's the case, then no matter how good we are at putting things in the right bin, if someone's not going to buy it, then it's not going to get turned into a new item, and it's going to end up going to landfill or incineration. And so I really want to educate people about like what we can do, how we can improve our recycling system, how we can reduce, and then ultimately to have policies that push us in that direction.
Well, come back to something you said a moment ago, though. I mean, I'm getting the sense from what you're saying that these were set up in some cases to be feel-good programs. We felt like we were doing something.
Yeah, and I think there was a Frontline documentary called Plastic Wars a year or so ago that did a good job of really going through the industry records about that marketing. And so the plastics industry, you know, set up a lot of groups, including front groups. There's even a group called Save the Plastic Bag Coalition in California that fought a lot of the local plastic bag laws. But, you know, even back in the late 80s, early 90s, the plastics industry saw that some cities were starting to talk about restrictions on single-use plastics. And that's when really they decided to push forward with a marketing campaign for recycling plastics. And that those chasing arrow symbols that we see on our containers are really related to that marketing campaign. And so that people see those kind of symbols and they think, oh good, this is recyclable, I'll just toss it in my bin. But that is really just a resin code. So the number inside identifies what type of plastic that container is made out of. And the general rule is that number ones and number twos are more recyclable than the higher numbers. The plastics industry has spent so much money and PR on having us feel good about recycling that a lot of us just see that symbol or just kind of blindly put things into the recycling bin and kind of get a warm, fuzzy feeling about it. But we really need to go beyond that and understand what the issues are with recycling in order to fix it and make it work.
Well, you write in the book about the differences from place to place in recycling. We have versions of that here. Medford and Ashland collect very different things. What accounts for those variations and of what will be taken and where it will be taken?
Yeah, so the one big take home from my book is to follow your local rules. So your jurisdiction has decided what they want in the bin and make sure that you put what they want in there. And I really look at what happens next. I look at the sorting and the end markets for those products. So your jurisdiction has decided whether, you know, the two main kind of philosophies for recycling, particularly for plastics, are either give me everything, so basically jurisdictions accept all rigid plastics. So they still won't accept the film because film tends to get clogged in the machinery and cause a lot of problems at recycling facilities. But some jurisdictions, they give us all the rigid plastic, and then they'll figure out what they can sort and have a market for. Then other jurisdictions will say, only give us your number one and number two bottles and jugs. That's plastic resin number one and number two. So those tend to be water bottles, shampoo bottles, plastic milk jugs.
Okay, Jenny, hang on a second. We got a break coming up right here. Can I recycle this? We're back on the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. How many times have you held up an item before you're about to throw it away and you go, can I recycle this? Well, from your lips to Jenny Romer's ear, she's written a book with just that title, Can I Recycle This? Subtitled A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Jenny Romer is a lawyer, legal associate for the Surfrider Foundation's Plastic Pollution Initiative, and drafter of legislation banning single-use plastics. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about an important subject taken up in a serious book, but with lots of illustrations that make it more fun and digestible to get into. You can join us at 800-838-3760 with your questions and comments, or send those by email to jx@jeffnet.org. So you're saying two approaches to curbside recycling: either give us everything and we'll sort it out, or just give us things like ones and twos and milk jugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the ones and twos for those resins tend to be, the bottles and jugs of those resins tend to be the most recyclable, meaning that they have the highest value on the resale market. So recycling is a commodities market. It doesn't really work unless somebody wants to buy that material on the other end. And for right now, the hottest plastic resin on the market are number two, that's HDPE bottles and jugs. So those are the milk jugs, plastic milk jugs, and shampoo bottles, detergent bottles. Those are worth it. The clear ones are worth about $1,000 a ton on the commodities market. And then other plastics, like what we call 3 through 7s, pretty much everything that is in the 1 and 2, those are worth only about -$17 a ton. That means you have to pay someone to haul them away. Maybe pay them a little bit less than sending to landfill, but still not what you're looking for if you're a recycler. I think that it's a good thing when jurisdictions are really restricting what they take in some ways, because it's more transparent. If jurisdictions are saying, give me everything, and then they're only really able to sell some of the material, then the consumer really doesn't know what's happening at that other end. And I think if there's more transparency, if consumers know what's actually being recycled, then they can make better choices in the supermarket when they're buying things and know, oh, it's really going to be recycled. And then ultimately for policy, to actually design policies based on that as well.
So the problem here for the people who really have it in their heart to make sure that they put as little stuff in landfills as possible is that it really doesn't matter, other than if they're buying the thing that is a more marketable kind of plastic after they use it, because it's all a commodities market. It's all about profit, and it's not regulated in a way that really forces people to take plastics back when they've created them in the first place.
Right. That is true right now. And I think, you know, once my book goes into, for each item, I go through 60 different items. I go into whether they're recyclable. My definition includes whether it's collected in the majority of jurisdictions, whether it's sorted, and whether there's that end market, but whether someone generally wants to buy it. And so knowing that information about each item kind of can help you make better decisions. But in California and in Oregon in particular, there's a lot going on at the local and state level as far as regulating plastics. And at the state level, really talking about, you know, not just the plastic bags and the foam foodware and straws, but talking about all that stuff on grocery store shelves. So we're seeing real discussions about holding producers, those manufacturers of all that stuff, all that packaging, responsible for paying for the costs of recycling and waste disposal. And when they're doing that, then they're thinking a lot more about what kind of material they're using. So using more recyclable material in the first place is really the ultimate goal. Yeah, and getting to a reuse system rather than just relying on recycling.
I had to remind myself a couple of times over the course of this book that it wasn't just about plastic, that there are other materials out there that do get recycled. But mm-hmm. This is a huge deal because plastic production is not tailing off over time, you point out.
Yeah, we're seeing it increase more and more. It's expected to triple by 2050. And we're seeing, you know, 11 million metric tons are entering the ocean every year. And we're expecting, if things continue as they are now, that there'll be more plastic and then fish in the ocean by 2050 by weight. And so, you know, plastic is a big deal. So the book's about recycling in general, and I do get into a lot of the logistics for, you know, things like aluminum and paper. But plastics are a big focus just because there is such a push to have so much of our packaging be in plastic right now, and so much of it not being truly recyclable.
Jenny Romer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She has written, with illustrations by Christy Young, the book Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. We already have an email from Becca in Lane County who says, a Grange near me collects our number twos, number fours, number fives. They say there's someone who takes those. I haven't asked who that would be. From your knowledge, is there much of a market for, well, twos you said for sure, but fours and fives?
Yeah, well, so ones and twos tend to be the most recyclable. And polypropylene, which is number five, it's kind of what yogurt cups are made out of a lot of the time. That's kind of a runner-up. I don't count it as, you know, fully recyclable in that there isn't quite enough of an end market for them to be considered wholly recyclable. But there are some places that take it and reprocess it into something else. But that's something that's still kind of in the works. We see some potential for number five, but not enough places are taking it right now.
So, Jenny, were the numbers assigned randomly, or were they on the basis of what is more likely to get reused in another way?
Originally, it was kind of random. Except for the number seven, which means other.
Everything else.
So number one through six are specific types of plastic, and then number seven is other. And number one has traditionally been recycled the most. So number one is PET. Those are the, you know, if you see a bag or something that says I'm made of water bottles, those are made from number one. And so those number one's pretty versatile. And then number six tends to be things like plastic party cups, like those red cups people buy for parties. Those are made of number six, and those have no domestic market, meaning no one wants to buy them and turn them into a new product in the U.S. They are still shipped abroad, but, you know, it's pretty questionable what happens a lot of the time when we're shipping our low-value plastic waste abroad, specifically to developing countries. China's stopped taking our low-value plastic. It's still going to places, but we've seen that really it's a humanitarian issue as well as an environmental issue when we're processing our low-value plastics in really kind of open-air facilities. A lot of the time in China, it was at inverted farms, at people's houses and in their backyards burning plastic. And that's really not what we think about when we think about recycling.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about recycling since the National Sword Policy went into effect in, 2018 to show us how much we depended on being able to dump our stuff off continent. We haven't actually changed our mix of materials we use in response, have we?
We haven't. And I think that, you know, this push that I was talking about with the law in Oregon and in other places, it's called Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR, which is a little bit of a wonky term. Mm-hmm. But we have it for other things like paint and carpet. But we're talking about it, I think, more and more for packaging. And I think part of that came out of with China closing its doors and really having to deal with our low-value plastics domestically. And so I think we're seeing those results now, where we saw with a lot of laws being introduced at the state level and then also at the federal level, we have the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, which is a law that really takes on plastic from all angles, basically. And I think we wouldn't be talking about it in such a big way if we hadn't had to really think about what we're going to do with all of the stuff that we're no longer exporting.
Jenny Romer, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an attorney very much involved in plastic legislation, banning the use of single-use plastics, keeping an eye on recycling. She has shown us the entire recycling process and visually with illustrations by Christy Young in the book, Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. It's a conversation we have had before, and you're welcome to join it this time as we talk about where the stuff goes when we're done with it. 800-838-3770 is our phone number, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. The descriptions of the recycling process are fascinating. And have you seen most of these in person?
Yeah, I love a recycling tour. So I've been on quite a few, and I was hoping to go on more right at the tail end of writing the book, but COVID made that more difficult. But I will say there are a lot of great tours that are available on YouTube now as well. But Sim's facility, that's the New York City facility that takes all of the bottles, the metal plastic and all the rigids in New York City. They have a really state-of-the-art facility. I've spent a bit of time there, and we have an illustration of that process in the book that walks you through all the things that state-of-the-art facilities use. Like electric currents and magnets and cameras to sort out the plastics. I like to think of them as lasers, the cameras that point at a plastic bottle and can tell the machine what type of resin it's made out of, and then use an air gun to shoot it in the appropriate bin. So there's some cool technology that's out there, and so I encourage people to take a tour of your local facility if it's available.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this is not just a book about plastics, because we do recycle other things, but of the many materials we recycle, Jenny, which has the highest percentage of actual recycling?
Let's say aluminum is a material that's pretty expensive. It's about $1,000 a ton, maybe $800 or $900 now. And that's a very high value material. It's easy to sort because it's a metal, so you can use some cool machinery for that, and that has really consistently recycled and turned into another product. Now, unfortunately, there are a lot of problems on the front end with aluminum, with bauxite mining, and so that's something in particular where it's really important to make sure that it's recycled, because there's so many greenhouse gases and again, humanitarian concerns at the front end. But aluminum, great example. Cardboard boxes tend to be recycled. That market fluctuates a little bit, but it's there consistently.
Even pizza boxes?
And so pizza boxes, I have some illustrations in the book, looking at pizza boxes in particular, and making sure that, most jurisdictions will accept cardboard, or pretty much everywhere will accept cardboard. Pizza boxes, some jurisdictions are skeptical or careful because of food and grease. And so making sure, I have an illustration of a pizza box and kind of what parts of it you can recycle. A lot of the time, if you have your liner with your pizza and it catches all the grease and you get rid of all the food, that box can be recycled. But sometimes jurisdictions are more careful. Maybe you can just rip off the top that has nothing on it and only recycle the top. So check out those illustrations. But that's a question I get quite a bit.
Sure. Now, you were talking about the EPR, Extended Producer Responsibility, with putting greater requirements upon the people who put products out there in the first place. To figure out where the stuff is going to go when we are done with it. Are there some countries that have higher expectations of producers, more programs like EPR, and therefore more recycling, or at least less introduction of materials that can't be recycled?
Yes, definitely. So, what we look to when we talk about EPR, particularly for packaging, are programs in Europe and in British Columbia and Canada. And so in Europe, there are really strict rules for packaging, and those rules are only getting more strict. And so right now there are some materials that can't be used at all. There are going to be even more. And so things like a type of plastic that can't be recycled won't be allowed in some packaging. And so this is something that manufacturers are having to deal with in other places that is becoming the norm in other places. And so, it shouldn't be something that we have, that we should be afraid of in any way here, because companies are already doing it. But we need to pass laws to make it so our local recycling centers aren't getting filled up with this low-value stuff that they can't sell. It's really not fair, because recycling is a commodities market, and they, it costs taxpayers, ratepayers money if this isn't working.
So has science come along a bit in figuring out ways to get tough materials like plastics to break down, Jenny?
Yeah, that's a big question. I have a background as an attorney. I've worked on some cases, or kind of greenwashing cases, where a company is advertising themselves as doing something that's better for the environment but actually isn't, or could be a little worse. And there's a lot of concern with compostable, or with plastics that are marketed as compostable or biodegradable. Federal Trade Commission has some guidelines about that. California and Washington have rules that basically say you can't call plastic biodegradable. And I think that that's something we're really going to be keeping an eye on. I think it's really good to be cautious, because there have been studies that have shown that if people see something that's called biodegradable, that they could be more likely to litter. And we definitely don't want that. And we've seen with compostable plastics in particular, those have a little bit more regulation. There are certifications for those. But we've seen, even with the certified compostable plastics, there was a letter from Oregon Recyclers that said, "We don't want this stuff. We don't want this in our compost." So definitely good to keep an eye on. We're looking out for innovation, but right now I would say we're not there.
I've heard people say in the past too that the compostable plastics are compostable in certain industrial facilities, but it's not the kind of thing you can throw in your own compost bin at home and expect a result from.
Yeah, so biodegradable plastic, really, I would not use that term at all. I wouldn't trust that term when I see it on a plastic packaging. But compostable, that has a definition or certification for it, but it has to go to a commercial composting facility, like you said. But even then, though, that letter from composters in Oregon were from commercial composters that said, "Hey, we don't want all this compostable, labeled plastic or labeled compostable foodware that's made out of plastic. It's not working in our facilities in particular." So, it's not a silver bullet, even if it does meet the commercial standard. So, and I think that is even more reason to really lean towards getting to reuse as much as we possibly can, because there isn't a silver bullet for compostable, or really for recyclable. I mean, there are so many steps that you have to get through correctly in order to make sure that something really is recycled into another item. So we're seeing a push for policies like utensils upon request, so that people aren't just automatically getting lots of plastic utensils, and then pushing for reuse delivery systems, like being able to order food or take out food in a reusable container that you can bring back, maybe with a little deposit, rather than having to get a recyclable or compostable container every time you go somewhere.
Because we still put out
so
a lot.
So that's another policy.
Okay, yeah, because otherwise we make a lot of stuff still that just gets chucked. And if it ends up in a bin, great, it might go somewhere. But as we're learning, maybe not. The book is called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. Jenny Romer is the author and our guest. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I'm glad you're listening. We're getting another lesson in recycling today from Jenny Romer, who is a lawyer involved in doing things like writing legislation banning single-use plastics and seeking things like EPR, extended producer responsibility. So the people who put the stuff out there in the world will do some steps in advance to make sure that they're taking some responsibility for what happens to products after we are done with them. Jenny Romer's book is called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics, with lavish illustrations by Christy Young. It's a very fun book to look at, despite a somewhat grim at times subject matter. You can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jenny, you mentioned the pandemic changed the arc of what you were doing with the book, at least in timing. But you also point out in the book that the COVID pandemic boosted the use of single-use plastics.
Yeah, the plastics industry, their PR people and lobbyists really got, as soon as the pandemic was starting to hit, really got out in front of the issue and were writing letters to HHS, where the CDC is based, to ask for an official declaration of single-use plastics as being safer than reusables. We saw a lot of lobbying and pressure to overturn local and state laws that were to reduce plastic. And this is a time where, so many of us were really scared about not knowing what was going to happen and not knowing how transmission was occurring. And so luckily we've learned a whole lot more now. The CDC officially stated that, contact transmission is very unlikely. And so, luckily, we haven't really seen rescission, or haven't seen those laws rescinded. And so, we're coming kind of out on the other side of it now, and really having to, work harder to get reusables in place more. But it's we haven't lost too much momentum, at least.
I would think that the online buying of and getting things delivered has probably also added to things like the numbers of cardboard boxes and bubble pack and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's a whole other issue. I mean, delivery, particularly Amazon and delivery systems like that, are a huge source of packaging right now, and so we really need further regulation of that as well, and to move towards a reuse system, especially for businesses and or people who are getting deliveries every day, because that is just so much. At least cardboard boxes are recyclable, and there's been a lot of efforts to try to pressure businesses to switch to non-plastic materials, but that thus far has not been effective. We need to see some policy there as well.
Well, and that it's kind of interesting, because I was thinking about that melding of paper envelopes and the plastic bubble wrap about a page before you got to it in the book. Why have we allowed things like that to become part of the marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because we don't, for packaging, there really isn't a whole lot of consideration that's gone into it. People really care about what they're ordering, that product that they're ordering. And a lot of the time, the businesses will deliver in whatever is easiest for them and least expensive for them. And unfortunately, a lot of that is not recyclable. Like you said, the paper envelopes themselves are recyclable. The paper envelopes that have bubble wrap adhered to them are not recyclable. And so having, companies think more about what their packaging is made out of is a huge goal of things like extended producer responsibility. Just having there be any responsibility for that, for having them bear the costs of what happens on the other end, and having it really, have their designers think a whole lot more about what we call end of life. So what happens when you're finished with that package?
There's similar things too, and believe me, all weekend long, not that I opened a lot of bottles, but when you take the metal bottle cap off, it's like, hey, this is recyclable. And then you think, oh, wait, there's a plastic liner. Now what do I do?
Mm-hmm. Well, metal bottle caps are recyclable. They might have a hard time making it through the machinery just because they're so small. They might fall through some of the screens and stuff, but a lot of facilities use magnets. And so those can potentially be recovered. And I'm told that there's enough metal there that's valuable that there is an end user for it a lot of the time. The same isn't true for plastic bottle caps, though. And I think there's also kind of a debate that I cover in the book of, do you leave the bottle cap on or not? I'll say that, yes, you should leave the bottle cap on. And the bottle caps on their own, the plastic ones, aren't going to make it through that machinery. They're going to fall through the cracks or end up kind of as residue that goes to landfill. But if you leave it on the bottle, then it'll stay with the bottle through the whole process, and then we'll be able to kind of be sorted out after it's sold to the manufacturer.
But don't we get off in situations where, for example, the bottle itself could be a 1 or a 2, an HDPE mm-hmm. or a PET, and the cap is something different entirely?
Yeah, caps a lot of the time are the polypropylene number 5. And so that's kind of figured out by at the manufacturer end. What they do is they'll buy a big, what's called, bale of bottles. So it's kind of like a hay bale that's bottles that are all condensed into a big rectangle, and then they'll shred it. And they'll shred all those bottles, including the caps, and that plastic that they shred will go into kind of a big vat of water. And polypropylene has a lower density, and so that'll float, and all the number one, the PET from the bottle, will sink. And so they're able to separate it out that way. I have a little illustration of that in the book. So I think that's interesting. And then if they have, if they have another buyer for polypropylene, they can sell it. So that's one thing that at least they know how to figure out. And I will say, too, that plastic bottle caps are a particular problem in the ocean because they do float, and they end up floating on the ocean surface. And things like albatross will eat a lot of bottle caps because they tend to accumulate on the surface. And so that's definitely not a good thing, and it stays in their stomachs for a very long time. So, when I think of bottle caps, I kind of automatically think of albatross. But at Surf Rider, we do a lot of beach cleanups, and we do beach cleanups and collect a lot of the data of what we find on the beaches, and we do find bottle caps there as well. So remember to put your bottle caps on your bottles and, use less water bottles, bring your own reusable bottle as much as you can.
Okay. Instructed there about the bottle caps. We just talked recently to Allison Cobb who wrote the book Plastic and Autobiography, talking about the albatross story. So yeah, very fresh in our minds. The whole guide section of the book is very straightforward. Everything ranges from red to green with, orange and yellow in between. Any surprises in the book for you? Things that we don't think are good to recycle, but are?
Unfortunately, there aren't a ton of surprises just because I've been, spending so much of my time going to conferences and going on recycling tours. But I will say kind of a big take home for people is that if it's made out of one, more than one type of material, if there's kind of a multi-layer packaging, maybe like a kind of a Tetra Pack that you get your Coke might get a coconut water water in, those tend to not be recyclable just because it would take a lot of energy to pull that material off, to pull that all apart. So a lot of the time, only the paper layer of that tends to be recyclable.
Same thing I noticed with the cardboard milk cartons, the paper milk cartons, only the because of the plastic layer, no good?
Yep, only the paper layer for those are recyclable as well. And those need to go to special facilities that are willing to kind of go through the extra effort of taking off the other layers. So so I try to walk people through kind of my thinking of each thing. And then there's some things like I say my husband really likes a particular brand of peanuts. And the peanuts container is made of a bunch of different materials that are all kind of, you know, stuck together. And so, you know, I try to sometimes separate those myself, but it can be a little dangerous.
Yes, so, I've noticed that, particularly with the blister packs, yes.
Yeah. And so taking the metal kind of bottom off of the cardboard sides and stuff like that. So, you know, I try to have cautionary tales of, you know, choose your battles, but try to reduce as much as possible. And I think get a better understanding of what happens next. And also try to avoid wish cycling. So if your jurisdiction doesn't want something, don't put it in your bin. Particularly something that's going to tangle the machinery, like plastic bags or things like people like to put in garden hoses and things like that. Definitely don't put those in your bin.
Well, and what's the figure on single-use bags? 12 minutes is how long most of them are in use? That's the average?
Right. But now we have, last time I looked, months ago, we had at least 550 local jurisdictions that had adopted plastic bag laws in 9 states. So I think that's something where we're making a ton of progress in reducing single-use plastic carryout bags. But I think it's also just opened up a conversation to talk about all this other stuff as well, which is great.
Larry, no town given, sent an email in, and he asks about the getting rid of things. And he says, how about burning polyethylene? Like propane, it only contains hydrogen and carbon. That again from Larry.
So there is a movement with the plastics industry towards what they call chemical recycling, which is essentially just plastics to fuel. That's not something that I support. You know, when we talk about recycling, we really want to talk about making another product. If we're talking, a lot of jurisdictions are already incinerating garbage and recycling, and I don't think that's where we should be going. We really want to make it into a new product, and that way we can avoid the extraction side of it as well. You know, if we're burning plastic, then we just have to, you know, extract. There's going to be more extraction as well, and that's also caused a lot of humanitarian and environmental issues there.
Bill in Sutherland dropped off a phone call. He says, turtles ingest plastic bags thinking they're jellyfish. Are phytoplankton consuming microplastic? And what effect does this have on them and the organisms that eat them?
Yeah, and plastics in the ocean is something that we're, you know, learning more and more about, and microplastics in particular. And so that really, all of the chemicals from plastic really make their way up the food chain, bioaccumulate in fish, and ultimately get to us as humans. And we're learning more about how microfibers transfer as well, how those plastic microfibers transfer. We're seeing them in things like shellfish. There's a lot of studies show that they're in shellfish and in fish. So it's definitely a huge concern.
Ham and Ashland dropped off a question too. Why don't we just make large companies responsible for recycling the plastic they use? Almost every water bottle has the big name company who bottled it, Nestle, Pepsi, et cetera. And it doesn't seem like it would be terribly hard to track back to them.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing some lawsuits now against bottlers in particular. But I think really with the extended producer responsibility laws, that's really the main way that we've seen success in holding companies accountable. And so, you know, how that would work is that companies would have to pay into a system based on what type of packaging they're using. And so if they're using more recyclable packaging, if they're source reducing, then they pay less into the system. And if they're using stuff that, you know, multi-layer, that's really hard to recycle, and that doesn't have recycled content, then they'll have to pay more. And so that's one way to do it. And I really want to see more incentives for reuse systems within those type of laws. So, you know, Oregon has a pilot program for beer bottles being reused and refilled rather than recycled. I want to see a whole lot more of that too.
And just about 30 seconds left, Jenny, to talk about bring your own everything. I mean, basically, this is adopting the backpacking mantra for pretty much everything, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think people are getting more used to bringing their own bags. And so I think moving on to things like bottles, coffee cups, and even bringing your own utensils and your own takeout food container when you go to a restaurant. So taking it to the next level personally. Well.
All kinds of things to think about. We get shown a lot in the book with the illustrations by Christy Young. The book is called Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastic Bags. It's by Jenny Romer, who's been our guest today. Jenny, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you.